This audio recording is presented by Jews for Judaism. We are dedicated to keeping Jews Jewish. www.jewsforjudaism.ca.
The last session of our course, Whatever Jews Should Know About Missionaries, is a little bit different. As you notice, there are no handouts for you to have to scramble to read through and follow the passages that I'm quoting. This evening, what we're going to do is a little bit different. We've talked somewhat theoretical over the past several sessions about issues of missionaries, and we watched some videotapes, and we've discussed different Bible passages. But all of this can really sit back in your mind and say, well, it would never affect me, or I'd never be fooled by the missionaries. And who would be silly enough to fall for all this stuff? Especially when we've sat here and we've gone through everything so logically, and we see how ridiculous it is for a Jew that's knowledgeable of Judaism to fall for the arguments of evangelical missionaries. So the last session that we always have is to have a few people that during their lives they got involved in different forms and aspects of Christianity, and to let them spend about 15 minutes each telling their experience of how they were raised Jewishly, how they got involved in Christianity, and how they returned back to Judaism. And we usually will have the speakers give their presentation, and then what we'll do is we'll open up for questions, and you can direct your question to whichever one of the people that you want. So we're fortunate that we have two people here this evening, and maybe a third one that's on his way. And I'd like to introduce both of them, and maybe for the purpose of the tape, I'll only use their first names and pseudonyms, if when appropriate. Okay, so we have Donna, and we have Carl. Okay, and we'd like to invite them to come and both sit up here, and we'll give each one of them a turn, or we can make their presentation to share with you their experiences. And then after they share that, both of them, then we'll be able to go into some questions. And I'll turn the microphone over to them as they speak.
My name's Donna, and first I have a question for you. How many of you read the last Jews for Judaism newsletter? Okay. Well, for those of you who read it, that's my story, Second Chance, in that newsletter. So you're ahead of everybody else who more or less know something about me. I was born in Bakersfield, California, and there weren't too many Jews there, to say the least. And my parents actually started the Reform Synagogue there. And we were not what most people would call really observant, but I think I had a lot more Jewishness in my life than many young Jewish people today. We always had, you know, Friday night candles and Kiddush. We always had a Seder. We fasted on Yom Kippur. We went to synagogue almost every week. My parents, especially my father, were ardent Zionists, very involved in all kinds of communal Jewish activities here in Los Angeles, for which they drove many hours and miles to be involved in. And then they also picked up our matzah for Passover, and because you couldn't even buy matzah in Bakersfield, so we had to drive to LA to pick that up. We didn't keep kosher, and we didn't observe, you know, Shabbat on Saturday, but still it was a lot more, I think, than you know, a lot of Jewish kids get. When I was 14 years old, we moved to Israel, and I went to the American school there, and I have a lot of relatives in Israel. But the religious association sort of ended when we went to Israel, because my folks figured, well, you know, we're just surrounded by Jews, so so we didn't need to do anything. And besides, they were very much alienated by the very Orthodox Judaism, which was the only choice in Israel. So I really didn't have much to do formally with Judaism after that. I went back to college in Boulder, Colorado, and then I quit, and I went to work as an au pair in Paris for a year. Then I came back to Washington, D.C., where I went to the Georgetown School of Foreign Service, and I got my Bachelor of Science in Foreign Service. And then it's there that I really started to become ill with an immune disorder disease. It's not like AIDS. It's not contagious. It's more similar to something like lupus or arthritis, for those of you who know something about it. And nevertheless, I graduated, and I moved back to L.A., and then I went off to graduate school at Brandeis. I got a master's in political science and was well on my way to PhD. I'm only giving you my degrees because you may say, well, anybody that gets involved in Jewish Christianity kind of thing must be stupid, okay? I don't think I'm the smartest person that ever lived by a long shot, but I wouldn't consider myself stupid. I had to leave Brandeis because of increasing illness, and I came back to the United States, and I came back to Los Angeles, excuse me, and I started to work as a tutor. And finally, my illness, that was between hospitalizations, my illness got so bad that for about 2 years I was hospitalized almost constantly on and off. And then I had quite a number of surgeries, and then after that, my former college roommate, who was raised a nice liberal Methodist, moved to L.A. and got a job here, and she was my best friend for 16 years. And I was really depressed because of my illness, and she took me to her church. She had become a born-again Christian. And it was really nice. It was really lovely. The people were very, very friendly. I didn't have many friends left by then. I'd been ill so long. And the singing was great. It was like, you know, really nice rock music, but not heavy, you know. And they were singing psalms. And, you know, there really wasn't much mention of Jesus. And this nice young pastor came out and talked about issues that really were relevant to a lot of the young people there, about dating and marriage and being honest at work and all kinds of, you know, good things. And it was really short and it was really easy, you know. And then it was very enthusiastic. And the people there all had Bibles and seemed to know so much and seemed to be so clean cut and really nice. And I went with her a few times, basically just because I enjoyed the experience. It was nice music, it was nice singing, it was nice people. Even my parents were happy that I was going out of the house for the first time in several years. You know, so it's a church, so what, you know? I mean, they really didn't, you know, think of it in any other way. And then she took me, she said, well, you know, you've been so sick, you know, would you... I've arranged for some people to pray for you. Well, you don't want to refuse somebody who offers to pray for you. In fact, later on I found out in the guidelines they give missionary people, they say, you know, when all else fails, ask the person if, you know, they don't want some prayer, because very few people will say, no, don't pray for me. Very few people say, we'll refuse prayer. Okay? That's actually in the guidelines. So, you know, you can argue with somebody if you ever meet any of these people intellectually, and they'll always end up wanting to pray for you, because that's what they've been taught, you know. And most people will not be rude and say, no, don't pray for me. They'll always say, sure, go ahead if you want, you know, doesn't bother me. So I met, I came to the church offices, because the church services were held in a big old movie theater. Now they're held in a public school. And it wasn't a Jews for Jesus thing. It was a regular Christian church. But as I found out, about, say, a quarter of the members were Jewish. And they got about 2,000 people every Sunday. So the people that prayed for me, as it turned out, were both Jewish, with their feet, you know, on and everything. One woman was from England. She says, oh, it's just, you know, a miracle that we're Jews and we're here praying for you, because, you know, God has set it up this way and everything. And when I accepted Yeshua, nobody mentioned Jesus, when I accepted Yeshua, my parents were really unhappy, but now they've accepted him too, and we're all just one big happy mishpacha, you know, and everything. And so they prayed for me, and I did get better. But I was probably getting better anyway, but I had friends and I had support, and I liked going to church. It was very social. So I kept going to church, and, you know, I was meeting so many Jewish people there, and they were telling me, but I'm still Jewish. I'm still Jewish. And it really didn't seem incompatible to me at that time, because, you know, I really couldn't argue with any of the things the pastor would say in his sermon. I mean, they were all really nice things. You know, don't steal, don't cheat, don't commit adultery, you know, be an honest person, be good, love God, pray for your fellow man, help the sick, help the poor. On Thanksgiving, we all served all the poor people, you know, Thanksgiving meals, and they were giving away their food and their clothes. I mean, you know, these are really good people. And I had never really experienced anything like this in Judaism. It's the synagogues I've been to, you know, everybody was very dressed up, and they just, the rabbi would say stand up, and the rabbi would say sit down, and there were a lot of, you know, prayers in very fast Hebrew that I didn't understand, and then there was some responsive reading in English that was very, you know, automatic and robotic almost. And here were these people who came to church in shorts, sometimes bathing suits, and in, you know, this and that, and they would wave their hands and sing and get us all spontaneous and enthusiastic, and yet, you know, they were so giving and so warm and so loving and so, you know, I thought, this, you know, this, they really have something here that, you know, that I didn't have all my life. And they were telling me that, yes, there's something that you didn't have, and that's Yeshua or Jesus. But that doesn't have any impact on your Judaism. Now you're a complete Jew. And I'm just trying to show you that in the context that I sort of gradually came into it, it didn't really seem to be, you know, contradictory or nonsensical. And everything was in Jesus' name at the end of the service or a prayer. But I read the New Testament, and it bothered me. It seemed anti-Semitic, the Christian Bible. But I was told, no, it's the translations. They only met a certain group of Jews. They only met the Pharisees. And there were many Jews who accepted Yeshua, and these were all the apostles, and these were, you know, Jesus' family and, you know, everybody else, and they were the, you know, the good Jews. And the favorite line, of course, is, you know, I'm just grafted in, and you're part of the original olive branch and all that. So they really made you feel special, like you were, you know, really, all Christians were equal, but some are more equal than others. If you're a Jewish Christian, you're really special in God's eyes. Okay, so finally, to make a long story short, I ended up getting baptized. My parents were devastated and started schlepping me around to rabbis. And that really didn't do any good. But what did do some good is I saw my parents suffering, and they really stuck by me through my illness. And they continued to stick by me even after I, you know, was in the church. Although they didn't accept the Christian part at all, they stuck by me as their daughter. They respected my motivations. They realized that, you know, I was an honest person who was misled. They didn't say, oh, you know, you're doing this to hurt us, or you're doing this to just try to run away from being Jewish, or, you know, anything else. And I saw the movie Shoah on TV. And it was, you know, Holocaust remembrance, Yom HaZikaron. And I asked my Christian friends about this. And I said, well, those people weren't really Christian. And it's like the whole issue was just brushed aside with that. You know, they, and I read some history books and things, and I saw that, no, a real Christian, a good person, could not brush it aside like that. I mean, it was a Christian society, if not all the people were religiously committed Christians, it was a Christian society in which this happened, in which Protestant ministers and Catholic priests and everybody, you know, went along with it. And was built upon a foundation of a couple of thousand years of religiously based anti-Semitism. Even if the Nazis' anti-Semitism was not based in religion, because they said, oh, Hitler wasn't a Christian, obviously, and this guy wasn't a Christian, Goebbels and all these people. No, they weren't. They said, oh, they were anti-Christian. But the thing is, they built it on a foundation with the people. And And I just felt that it was a Christian problem that was not being addressed. It's not a Jewish problem, the Holocaust, in that way. It's a Christian problem. How are they going to reconcile their faith to this occurrence? And they weren't interested in that. It was just not an issue. And the Crusades weren't an issue, and the past anti-Semitism was not an issue. Those people just weren't Christians, and that wasn't enough of an answer for me. And then I took a class in Bible study that everybody in the church was encouraged to take. And there was this issue, of course, you know, that my parents were going to hell, and everybody was going to hell that didn't accept Jesus. And I couldn't live with that because my parents were good people, and they were good parents, and they were good to me. And I was just tormented by the fact. And I asked some of the other people who would routinely walk around saying, well, my husband isn't saved, you know, but, or my parents aren't saved. And I said, doesn't that keep you up every night, all night long? You live with a man, or you have his children, and you believe sincerely that he's going to burn in hell everlasting, God forbid, if something happens to him on the freeway the next day. And they would say, yes, he is going to be in hell, but, you know, he'll probably accept Jesus. And, but they, you know, he just didn't. It was like a very selfish religion, you know. Because I was tormented by this. I was not only tormented by my parents going to hell, but my grandparents going to hell, and all the people that died in the Holocaust going to hell. And all the people, I would just look around on the street and think, oh, according to them, 80% of them, 90% of them are probably going to hell. And I just couldn't live with all humanity going to hell. But they, you know, it troubled me as a ethical issue, you know, as a moral issue, as a feeling human being. And it didn't seem to bother them. They were all so happy in the Lord and praised the Lord, and they were so ecstatic because they were reborn. And I said, how can you feel like this? I'm so depressed thinking of everybody going to hell, you know. And they said, no, you have to think of that salvation's open to everyone, and that's why, you know, you work to convert people. And that is why they're motivated to work, because they really can't bear with the idea of everybody going to hell either, so at least they make themselves feel better if they can convert one or two people in their life. But it was something I couldn't live with, especially my parents, people I love so much, you know, it just didn't make any sense. So I was gradually, you know, getting away from the church. I was really having a lot of other intellectual problems with it. And I went to my first Easter service. And before then, I guess in my mind, I could always rationalize it like, you know, that I'm really praying to God. I never really, you know, thought about it. Okay, it always ended with in the name of Jesus or something, but, or in the name of Christ our Lord or whatever it is. But I guess, and maybe I'm looking back on this and trying to, you know, give excuses for myself. I don't really know anymore. It's hard to tell what I was thinking when. But in my mind, I was usually praying to God, you know. And Jesus' name was like, well, you know, he was sort of just helping the message get there, or I don't know, something. And then at Easter, when they were all saying, he is risen, and the congregation, well, he is risen indeed, and all this stuff, because there was never a cross or anything in this movie theater, okay? It wasn't like a Catholic church. It wasn't what, like, most of you think of as a church. You just walked into a movie theater, and everybody was singing songs. There was no cross, there was no crucifix, there was no body hanging up, there were no pictures of any kind, no stained glass windows, nothing, okay? So, but they were, on Easter, this all, they did have this cross, and they were saying, he's risen indeed, and all of a sudden, it's like, oh, God, they're worshiping the human being. You know, it just really, really hit me. And I didn't say a word through the whole service. Everybody was getting all ecstatic. Like, I usually got, you know, singing and clapping and all this. And I just sat there. I was really uncomfortable. And from that moment on, I just knew I couldn't continue in this. And I started talking to a rabbi and learning. Also, my parents had convinced me another really good thing. They said, you know, before you made this decision, you should have really talked to us first. You owed us that at least. And my father, who claims a lot of things about his non-belief and et cetera, started quoting the Ten Commandments to me about honoring your father and your mother. But I realized that that was true and that I should have investigated Judaism more thoroughly. I owed it to all those people who had come before me and died. I owed it to my parents. I owed it to my grandparents. I owed it to the people that died in the Holocaust. I owed it to all my ancestors who had kept Judaism alive for, you know, thousands of years. I mean, didn't I owe them 6 months of study before I made this kind of decision, you know? I mean, really. So, belatedly, unfortunately, but fortunately, I at least did it. I did start to study Judaism, and I found, you know, going to different communities and stuff, that the more I learned about Judaism, the more I realized that the things that had attracted me to Christianity, God's love, God's mercy, ethical behavior, things like that, were really Jewish. And the things that I didn't like about Christianity, like everybody else who didn't believe, you know, theologically exactly as you did, was going to go to hell, weren't Jewish at all. And I was really out of the church, but I had no place to go, and I was eating in the Gila restaurant over here, because I wasn't kosher yet, but I loved the pizza, and I saw a flyer for Rabbi Kravitz's class, and I came, and it was just a door open to me. I found out, after the fact, what had happened to me, and how it had been done to me, and how I had been manipulated, and it wasn't coincidence, and it wasn't accident, and it wasn't, you know, that this was all a very well-funded, carefully thought-out plan, and how it was, how you've learned that it is a part of these people's theology that Jews convert because it validates their faith. It's an important building block of their theology that Jews convert. Not only they want to save you for the sake of your soul so that you don't go to hell because they're nice people and they don't want you to go to hell, but it's necessary that you accept Christianity to validate their faith, to make their faith whole. Not to make you a complete Jew, but to make them a complete Christian. And I went to Rabbi Kravitz's house for Shabbos, and he really helped me, and I'm still finding my way in the community in my own place and my own level of observance. I found a really lovely group that I spend Shabbat with now almost every weekend. I brought one of my friends here who spends Shabbat, whose house I go to for Shabbat, and it's a process. I mean, I don't think any Jew ever, you know, gets to the end. Your whole life is a process of learning, and I'm still learning, but now I have, thank God, a direction to go, thanks to Rabbi Kravitz, and I've learned what happened to me, and that was very important to me, to learn what had happened to me. That's about it.
My name is Carl, and I was a Mormon for 12 years. And it's been a road back to Judaism, let me tell you. Let me just give you a little bit of history of where I'm coming from, and possibly that will help everyone understand. I come from a home where my mother is a Jew, my father is not. There was no Jewish tradition or Christian tradition taught in our home. I'm the youngest of three children. All of us, I would consider us coming from assimilated backgrounds. My mother basically, as she says in her own words, opted out of Judaism. She was raised in Fairfax, went to Fairfax High, and came from a family where her father and mother both escaped from the Soviet Union. And I heard a great deal about these stories on how they had to get out of the country and the reasons for doing so. Having no real Jewish background or tradition, except for the family history that I knew about, I was inquisitive as a child. But there was no direction for me to really go in. I wasn't encouraged to go into any. Where I grew up in L.A., almost all of my friends were Jewish. And so that gave me an opportunity when I was younger to go to Hebrew school and to learn whatever. I don't really remember. All I remember is that the Hebrew characters were formed in the form of an animal. That's what I remember. And the rabbi trying to teach us, because I do remember it was a rabbi. It was a small class. And I always got in trouble in that class. I don't know if it was just because I had a nice Goyish name. I have no idea. Probably because I always used to pick on the girls, and then I would get locked in the closet for a few minutes. And then I would tell everyone how nice it was in the closet, and then they'd start picking on the girls, and they all end up in the closet with me. But it didn't last long. I don't remember how long I went to Hebrew school. In terms of a Jewish awakening for me, it probably happened in high school, where I went to high school. Someone broke in to our high school one weekend and had, with spray cans, painted swastikas, kill the Jews, all kinds of anti-Semitic sayings all over the high school. And this is a large campus. There were about 6,000 people at our campus. and it hit something. I didn't know what. I didn't know really what I was feeling, except some anger and frustration. And basically, there were a lot of classes after this where people could attend to discuss this situation, what happened, and if it's going to happen again, how to deal with it. And I attended one of them, but I really didn't feel it was an issue that I really had any serious problem with. I went to, I graduated and went to college, and it was really there that I began to become inquisitive as to, you know, what's life all about, as everyone, I think, does during that age. And so I began to look into different religions. It never occurred to me to really look towards Judaism, because I never really saw anything positive out of it, to be honest. The friends that I had were Jewish, and I would consider them, they were not good Jews, basically. My family, my mother's side of the family, all her brothers and sisters married non-Jews. So I really felt that, you know, there's really nothing here for me. And with my last name, I felt that there was a real barrier. I could just sense that when I met other Jews. So I just began to explore different churches. And I eventually ended up in a Mormon church. Now, one thing about the Mormon church that's different probably than any other church is that you're going to find that there are no crosses. It's a very large type family congregation. Everybody sits together. It's a very strong family type of an organization. I eventually had some missionaries come to my home, and they taught me. And during the process of teaching me, there were a lot of concepts brought up that all sounded kind of Jewish. Prophets, a temple, things that I had heard before, but didn't understand their context. And it just didn't sound that foreign to me. It sounded somewhat familiar to me. After 3 months, I was challenged to be baptized, and I was. And one end got dunked, and I have to admit that, you know, everyone said that your baptism day is a big step. You're really going to feel something. It's really a commitment. It's a big thing. And I took it very seriously. But I was keeping a journal through this whole time that I was investigating the church. And as I read back in it even today, as I read about my baptism, there was something amiss. And I couldn't put my hand on it. Anyway, shortly after I was baptized, Mormons are really big into genealogy. So I attended a genealogy class and started to do my genealogical work. And as I was doing it, this teacher said to me, "Hey, you're a Jew." And I looked at her and I go, "I'm not a Jew." And she goes, "No, you're really a Jew." And I said, "How can you say I'm really a Jew when I know I'm not a Jew? I'm a Mormon." And she goes, "No, you're really a Jew. And we're gonna prove it." And I said, "Oh, okay." Well, she told everyone that I was a Jew, and everybody wanted to know how this Jewish convert became a Mormon, and how no one knew, and with my name, no one, of course, would know. So, anyways, this really began to awaken something in me as I started to do genealogy. And I began to have a sense of pride of my Jewish roots. 8 months in the church, I received a mission call, and I went for 2 years on a mission for the church, paid my own expenses. That's what every young man or young woman will do. And I was sent to the Philippines. And I went there. And by that time, I began to become aware that there's something to this Judaism, and I don't understand it, but I began to study it at that time. One thing that was really interesting is when I got there, the Filipinos could not, they usually call Americans Joe. But in the part of the Philippines I was in, they didn't call us Joe. They would say Jew or Hi Jew. And I was... So whenever I'd walk down the street, they'd always look at me and go, "Hi Jew." And I'd just look at my companion and go, "How do they..." This is when I first got there. And after I was there a while, and I started to be a senior companion, and my juniors, I'd tell them that I was a Jew, and I said, "And everyone knows," and then people would say, "Hi Jew." They just couldn't figure it out. But anyways, this sense of Jewishness began to grow, really, for me, when I was on my mission. I didn't finish my mission in the Philippines. I was only there a year. I finished my mission in Seattle, Washington, what I did there was, at that time, the Mormon Church began a very strong proselytizing program towards the Jewish people. The Mormon prophet announced, "It is the day of the Jew. It is time to start teaching the Jewish people about the gospel." And my mission president, hearing that I was a Jew, asked me to take charge of this program and develop it. And I was like very embarrassed because I had no idea how to even approach Jews. I really knew literally nothing about Judaism. And I told him that, and he says, "That's okay. The Lord will bless you, and it will come to you." And I just looked at him and I said, "Uh-huh." So I went down to downtown Seattle, and I was on a very limited budget, as most missionaries are. And I spent about $200 on Judaica, on books. And I had two stacks, one on Jewish life and another on Jewish history. And I just sat there and I looked at it and I go, I thought of my mom and I go, "No wonder, Mother, you didn't pursue this, because there was just so much." So I opened the Jewish history books and I started to study those. And so I began to understand a little bit about Judaism, where the Jews came from and why Jews were in Soviet Union and how they came out of Israel. And that was very interesting to me. And then I started to study about Jewish life. And for someone that knows nothing about Jewish life and begins to study about Jewish life, you get very confused, because you're trying to comprehend Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox. And I'm trying to comprehend it all at one time so I can teach it to people that know nothing about Judaism and sound like I have some ability to communicate this knowledge. So I went on this process. Anyways, to make a long story short, I learned a lot. I was effective. I taught a lot of missionaries. In fact, the missionaries became so convinced about Judaism that the mission president slammed down the mission to the Jews and told us we couldn't teach Jews any longer, which, you know, was really a blessing in the long run, as I look back now. I came home and went to BYU, and at BYU I started my studies in psychology, and again this issue of am I a Jew began to really create a lot of turmoil within my soul, and I began to identify with it and study it and explore it. I then changed my major to Middle Eastern Studies, which I graduated in. I started to learn Hebrew, and then I had to make a decision, and that was, do I keep studying this because it was a very difficult thing, or do I remain a Mormon? And I couldn't get my thoughts in order as to where am I going, what is my direction. So I decided to, for one semester, I dropped out of school for that semester and sold my car and flew off to Israel. I figure if I can't feel something in Israel and get it together there, then I'll just go on. When I went to Israel, I can't tell you what a change that brought in my life. I can say that one experience that I will never forget is when I went to the Western Wall and feeling a tremendous amount of pride and an honor in terms of, I just felt family and generations behind me, and the honor I felt in terms of I and my family being the first Jew to have this honor to go to the wall. I didn't understand all that the wall signified and represented, but there was a tremendous feeling there for me that really began to put a cap on the direction that I should go in. I stayed in the country for about a month, toured all around, came home, and it really came back to BYU and realized that I've got to make some decisions. And the decision I felt that I had to make was not going to be good for me, which was to leave the Mormon faith and to become a Jew. So all of my Jewish books and my mezuzah and my menorah, I ripped everything off the wall, all of my pictures, everything, threw them in a box, went down to U-Haul and threw it in the locker, slammed it shut and said, "That's over with." And tried to continue on this way for about a day. And realized that this wasn't a solution. So I went back down to the locker, pulled everything out, put it back where I had it, and felt very comfortable. At the same time, since I had just gotten back from Israel, my church leader asked me to teach a Sunday school class about Israel and Judaism. And that was a very difficult thing to do, because I realized at that point in my life that I was feeling more as a Jew than I was a Mormon. But I tried very hard, And I had to be released from that calling because everyone in the class is getting very confused as to who I was. Was I a Jew or a Mormon? So he called me in the office and sat me down, and he says, I really think you need to talk this one out. So we talked it out, and he said, I think you need to go back to Israel and figure it out again for yourself. So a couple of months passed. I sold my new car, and I flew off to Israel for 2 months and stayed there. And came back, and again, it was a very difficult decision. What should I do? Especially because I had been dating a very good Mormon girl for 2 years at this time, who really seemed to understand what I was going through. Well, to make a long story short, 4 months after I came back from Israel, this girl and I became engaged, and we were married, and we were married in the Mormon temple for time and all eternity. And we decided, and she knew how much my Jewish ancestry was meaning to me, so we decided that the best thing to do was to finish school in Israel. So we packed up everything, and we went to Israel. That's time up. Well, I then realized that I had not married a girl who could become a Jew or liked the Jews at that point. It was a very difficult thing for her. She really felt like a minority. It was very difficult. We lived in a very secular neighborhood, but she just couldn't get into knowing about the religion and felt very uncomfortable. We came home, and we tried to work out things for 1 year, and it just didn't. And the issue of Judaism was a major one for us. And we decided that we're both young. It is best that we pursue our lives in the directions that we feel that we should, and so we did divorce. And I decided, well, I've got to make some more decisions, and I knew I wasn't time to run to Israel. So I stayed up in Utah and decided that I would just wait things out and take my time with them. And this is 2 years ago now. So last November, I knew that if I was going to explore who I was as a Jew, I'd have to leave Utah. I think there's 4 Jews in Utah total. So I moved down here, and it took me a couple of months, but I ended up here at Rabbi Kravitz's office. Now, the reason I came was I didn't know where to go. I didn't know if I needed deprogramming. I didn't know what I had to learn, what I had to do. Technically, was I Jew? Was I a Jew? I had all these questions. So I came into the office, and we sat down and we talked, and I finally received some instruction and some direction. And I think that's one of the greatest and the unique abilities of what Jews for Judaism can do, because there's a lot of us, a lot of people like me, that are out there that want to come back, that have a feeling that they should come back, but don't know how to. And unfortunately, the Jewish community, where do you turn? Who do you talk to? If you talk to a Reform, then the Orthodox don't recognize you. If you talk to a conservative, it's a very difficult thing that maybe you guys don't wrestle with, but someone in my position would. So here I am. It's been a process. And I will be honest, it is not an easy thing to make this change. I learned Mormonism for 12 years, and I did believe it. And now to reverse some of the, I want to say guilt trips, but some of the structure of repentance or look out, old scratch is going to get you type routine, it's very hard to pull yourself backwards. And that's the only thing that has stagnated me. But I've kept plowing ahead. And I want you to know, I am proud to be a Jew, and I'm proud to be here. Thanks.
All right, my name's David Papkin. I'll tell you a brief story about myself, extremely brief. I was raised in New York. My dad died when I was 13. Actually, when I was 12. I was bar mitzvahed after my dad died. My mom was raised Orthodox in Ellenville, New York. They really only had one kind of Judaism in Ellenville, from what I understand. My dad was raised conservative, and they decided to raise our family a cross between conservative and reformed. I don't know what you'd call that. And I went to Hebrew school. I went to 2 different Hebrew schools, a conservative and a reform one. And it's funny listening to Carl's story, because I remember that my teacher, he grabbed me by the hair and threw me out the door a couple of times. And I didn't learn that much in Hebrew school, but very, very little. I remember a lot of the songs. That's really amazing. And a little bit of the letters. But whenever I'd go to services, I felt I don't know, embarrassed being there, and like when the Torah would come around, and know some people would kiss it, and am I supposed to kiss it, am I doing something wrong, or sacrilege, you know. And then over the years, well, I moved to California when I graduated high school, and I didn't really know any Jewish people here. And my brother and I, we tried a couple times to go to services, and I don't know, we saw these people, they were really hypocrites. They're like these people, dishonest thieves. You know, this one guy, he worked for the Justice Department, so you figure that one out. And he was there, and there, you know, for the, I guess, the High Holy Days. And we didn't know what was going on. It was all in Hebrew, it was conservative, and no one offered to help us in any way, shape, or form. And we just sat there for an hour, kind of stared at each other, and then we said, come on, let's go get something to eat. And we left. And I didn't really know that much about my Judaism. My family isn't a very close family. It's rank with intermarriage. Matter of fact, my cousin Felice, she just got married in July to a non-Jew, and I didn't go to the wedding, you know. But about Christianity, I wasn't involved with any Messianic organizations. Pretty much straight Christianity, born-again evangelical. I was approached by it at a health club. This guy, man, he worked for Campus Crusaders for, what's his name? And we were talking, riding the life cycle and talking, and he was reading this book. It was Josh McDowell's Tough Answers to Tough Questions. No, Evidence Demands a Verdict. That's what it is. And we were talking, and he said his dad's Jewish. And I was like, wow, and I felt the rapport with him. And we started talking about the gospel, and I wasn't ready to swallow anything. He pulled out those little tracts, you know, those little yellow ones, the three questions or whatever. And we talked, but I wasn't ready to buy into anything he was saying, because there's something in me said there's not something quite right about all this. But years and years of people in college are pounding into me. We live in a Judeo-Christian society. I mean, what is this Easter thing and Christmas? And, you know, on happy days, they're always, you know, singing Christmas carols and all this stuff. I mean, I was always curious about it, but I didn't know anything about it. And so I kept, we kept talking and talking and talking. And about 2 months later, you know, I saw a friend bought me a Bible, and I read it. And I found all these amazing things. I didn't know that almost all the apostles were Jewish. Jesus, he fulfilled all these prophecies. Like, wow. And I started asking all these questions. And I said, but I'm going to get answers and I'm not going to rush into anything. But I didn't know any Jewish person to ask any questions. I only asked the Christian people and they gave me their answer. Coincidentally, they happened to fit in neatly. One day I was sitting here in church and I said, this is amazing how all these things fit so well together. And this Bible, look at how he fulfilled all these prophecies. Could they have changed a couple things in the gospel? I mean, in this Bible, could they? It just seems to fit together too well. So I went in this place in Tustin called the Jewish Development Corp. And I bought a Jewish Bible. It's called the JPS translation. And but it was strange, different, and it troubled me. And my Christian friend said, David, you shouldn't mess with that. You don't have enough strength in the Lord yet. Okay. And sounds over. And so I did is one time I went to my brother, my middle brother, his marriage in Rochester, New York, and I asked a rabbi there, it was a conservative rabbi. This guy was weird. We were talking, and I asked him, and they said, which is right? The Jew or the Christian? First he goes, I mentioned what's his name's name, and he goes, if he existed. I go, what do you mean if he existed? Come on now, I'm not stupid. The guy existed. And then he goes, well, maybe they're all right. He goes, maybe the Muslim, the Arab, you know, the Christian, the Jew, they're all right. I was like, what? He said, I said, wait a minute, I wasn't what I was expecting from a rabbi. He says, you have to find your own path to God. And I was like, this doesn't sound right. And he didn't want to be bothered to me, he just wanted to eat food. And he could tell me these stupid parables about trees. I didn't know what I didn't know what he was talking about. And he didn't want to be bothered me. I said, fine. Judaism isn't going to be bothered me. To heck with Judaism. You know, I mean, I started, I just felt, well, I'll give this Christian thing a shot. And these people made me feel very welcome, and I'm very estranged from my family. My family lives in New York. So my story, I'm going to be totally honest with you. My motivations for it, coming back, looking at it now, probably acceptance is a big part of it. I had a family suddenly. I had no relatives out except for my brother. I had people in church. They were patting me in the back because I'm Jewish. Go over to the house. We'd always go eat. Clean-cut people, beautiful women. I mean, friendly people wanted to help me. They helped me move 3 times. I mean, just great people. And I was really sucked into it, and I started studying. It's something you can believe in. Christianity is meat and potatoes. You can see some results for your efforts. It gives you a set of morals to believe in. And I felt very good about myself. I started going a little overboard. 3 times a week Bible study plus Sunday school. I was already trying to proselytize my brother. He told me never to come into his house again and proselytize his you know, child. He made me promise, don't ever, 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 ever bring up the name of Yeshua in my house again. You know, and I was like, okay. And he told me how, okay. I said, fine, but I didn't lie. I said, I said it in a way because I don't like lying, and you know, Krishna's not supposed to lie. But I intended to. I said I won't bring it up, but I'm gonna proselytize you because I want you to go to heaven. You're gonna go to hell. My dad died, and he said he went to hell. So there's a possibility he may have observed some Abrahamic covenant, so it's possible he knew about Jesus. I don't know. And so anyway, trying to wrap this up here. After a period of time, after about years worth of time, I met this person in my chemistry class, Moshe Benarosh. He's in the Long Beach community. He's an Orthodox Jew, and we're in chemistry. We're just staring at each other across this lab table. He had, you know, a kippah on. He was wearing tzitzit, and he had this beard. And I was like, wow! I was just like, never seen anyone. I mean, this guy knew what Judaism was all about, and I respected him because a lot of boarding in Christians, they have disdain for Reform and Conservative Jews because you don't care. You don't do anything, you're hypocrites. But the Orthodox Jew, he tries to follow God. He may be wrong and misguided, but he, you know, he's doing what's right. He wears his kippah, he does his tefillin, all these different things, kosher. He's really trying, and I had all these questions, and I was just trying to suck him dry the information. And he invited me over for a Shabbos dinner, and I was like, some Jewish food, this could be a good thing. I mean, I hadn't had a good home-cooked meal in a while, and I really liked it. I went over there. I ate 15 pieces of chicken. I'm not ashamed to say that. I couldn't believe I had so much food there, but I missed the temple service. But it made me feel very welcome. And next time I went over there, he had a little guest waiting for me, this guy named Al Alavi, a friend of Robert Kravitz. And we started talking. Now, at this point, people had laid hands on me, they'd prayed. They didn't really want me going, but I felt determined. I need to know more about my Judaism. I felt something pulling at me. And he started talking. He was like trying to be all calm. He was really like a vulture. He was just like ready to pounce on me. And I was just, you know, oh, how are you? And like, he started talking. And I didn't want to offend anyone, start preaching what's his name to there. And I was very cautious. And he said, no, look, you know, let's be honest. The cards on the table. It's over his house. And this guy has a really nice house. And he has all these books. And he started saying, well, let's go over. He says, you know, there's no mistakes. And I go, that's right, it's divinely inspired. He goes, well, good, let's talk it over. And I said, that's fine, because I'm going to bring you to the Lord. That's fine with me, no problem. It's just one more Jew brought to heaven, you know. And he started telling me all these things and showing me just these things. And he was really abusive and abrasive, but just at the borderline where I could take it. And he was showing me all these different things in there. He just said, forget about the Old Testament. Let's just show you the New Testament. It doesn't match. And he's showing me all these different things. And I go, wait. And he goes, I wanted to leave. I feel like melting through the floor. I mean, my whole world was crumbling around me. And I was like, wait a minute. Even you, in all your wisdom, has been really sarcastic. I can't dispute Daniel 9. He goes, Daniel 9? He said, let's take a look at Daniel 9. And he just crushed me. And I just felt her. I was just looking at this thing. My whole year of faith, everything I believed in was gone. Because I'm looking at this book. It was all this, you know, a pack of lies. I mean, so much mistranslation. Because I could still read a little Hebrew. You know, the thing is, I'm a reasonably intelligent person. Some people can deny and just say, well, I'll believe in it anyway. When he showed me in Hebrew how they mistranslated words, you know, Isaiah, you know, Alma and Betula, different other words in Isaiah, you know, Eli, with the lamb, why have you slaughtered me? Eli, lama azantani. Different words in it, doesn't they say sabachthani? It says the same thing. I go, wait a minute, this isn't wrong. These people aren't going to lie about it. He goes, find out for yourself. And I just left his house, and I swear, I was really depressed. I was worse than depressed. I have to tell you that it's not a pleasant experience. And a couple times, I felt hesitant about going up to other Jews and who have been involved in Christianity because it's very painful. Next day, I was at home, and I said, I'm not going to just throw away a year. I'm going to look myself. And I started reading some book. And I realized, oh, I was mistaken. Sadly mistaken. And I called up guy Rabbi Engel, and I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm just sitting here. I have nothing to believe in. I just feel like this huge black void, this blob of nothing. And I went and I saw Rabbi Kravitz, because Rabbi Engel had to speak. And we started talking, and there's this little voice inside me that just felt sad and silent and sick, you know, this whole time, because when you're into really heavy, you go through a year of spiritual growth, you get programmed in a certain way. I'm not as much buying into some of the programming aspects as some people are saying, like the deliberateness of it. It's for Jews and Christians alike, they have a certain programming. It is spiritual growth and how to deal with subjects, temptation, sin, lust, different things. And you program responses, and you respond in a certain way, and you get your joy and your happiness from certain ways, and they're all gone, and you have nothing to replace it. It was very unpleasant. But I said is, okay, I'm going to start finding it some more and reading and attending some more Shabbos dinners. You know, I also went to the shul and I started doing some reading and I started getting into Judaism pretty heavily. And Rabbi Kravitz warned me against that. He told me that, you know, if you do that, you'll just probably drift away from religion altogether. But I bought tefillin, I started putting on tefillin every day, and I had some friends who were very religious, you know, very from, and they put, not pressure, but they tried helping me, and I found out about this program called the Ivy League Torah Program. Because when you have people who have been going to yeshiva for 12 years, you feel kind of lost, and then they know how to do all these things. They can do a kiddush like that, boom, I mean, they know how to do all these prayers. They can bench, you know, just rote, and I'm like, whoa, trying to read the words in there. And so I asked if I could go to yeshiva, and this yeshiva program was very interesting because they actually gave you a stipend to go. And I went for it, but I was feeling a little strained before I went. I was saying, should I go, shouldn't I go, should I go, shouldn't I go, should I go, shouldn't I go? And I was changing my plane ticket four times. And I said that there's a lot of Jewish people out there who have never seen the truth. I owe it to go. And I went. But it was just conditions there and just too much too soon. I left. And I took a little break from religion. And today, I put my tefillin on every day. I've calmed down a lot of issues in my mind, but I know that, if you pardon the expression, Rome wasn't built in a day. I'm still listening and I'm learning. I've learned also that nothing is as cut and dry as it seems. And here I am today. I'm Jewish. I'm proud to be Jewish. Last weekend I spent my friend Shabbos at a friend's house. I didn't intend to stay the whole weekend, but he not coerced me into it, but he said stay. And I did a kiddush by myself, but they had four other people doing kiddush because you had family sitting over. And everyone's waiting to wash, and I'm sitting there to do the kiddush, and I'm standing up, and they're all waiting, and I'm reading Hebrew very slowly, and my hand's going like this, and wine splashing everywhere, like this. But it was the most rewarding experience. I did it by myself. No one helped me. I read the Hebrew myself because I taught myself Hebrew again. And there's a lot to Judaism. If I could give any small piece of advice, it is here. Is that if someone, any of the people here, their children or themselves, well not if themselves, if their children or anyone who's been involved in some other religion, when they come back to it, you have to have a lot of support because there's an extended support family in these other religions. And also, you can't be a hypocrite. If you want them to come back and believe in it, then you're going to have to believe in it. I'm not telling everyone here to become frum and all the women to put on shidels and, you know, whatever. But if you want them to have some observance, you're going to have to do something. Kiddush, tefillin, something. Because if you don't believe in it yourself, and they get their input from you, they're not going to believe in it. And that's all I have to say.
Jews for Judaism hopes that you have found this audio recording to be helpful and informative. Jews for Judaism is an international organization dedicated to countering the multi-million dollar efforts of Christian missionary groups that target Jews, the impact of destructive cults and Eastern religions, and the growing rate of intermarriage that is devastating the Jewish community. Jews for Judaism achieves its goals through one-on-one counseling services and educational programs and materials that connect Jewish people to the spiritual depth, beauty, and wisdom of Judaism. Please contact Jews for Judaism if we can help you. www.jewsforjudaism.ca. Keeping Jews Jewish.